Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnayar. Normally on a normal podcast that we do, we cover everything from talking about the television coverage, streaming coverage, as well as our favorite matches we've watched, favorite commentators. But we thought it'd be a great opportunity here, a great time to go ahead and do a deep dive on a brand new series that's out there. It's been out for a few weeks now, but still many of us are kind of catching up and watching these episodes of Welcome to Wrexham, which is a documentary series that's running on FX, also available through Hulu on streaming. And Kartik, I know I've been loving this one, but what about you, and what's different about this one than some of the other documentaries that we've seen?
Well, I think that there's more of an emphasis on the ownership and the community than there have been in other documentaries, which have been largely based around, okay, so the QPR documentary that I love, 4-Year Plan, which is now dated, right? It was made in after the 2010-2011 season. That that documentary focuses heavily on the ownership, which made it more interesting than documentaries that just focus on players and coaches. But the more recent documentary series we've had in this sport, the Juventus one, the Borussia Dortmund one, the Arsenal, Spurs, Manchester City, they've all been based around coaches, it seems like, more than anything. And maybe to a lesser extent, players and constant focuses on matches, right? And results of matches. And then fallout from results of matches. This, granted, you know, we do have episode 2, which focuses heavily on failing to make the promotion playoffs, the half season, the first half season that Reynolds and McElhaney had bought the team, and then the fallout from that. But it's much more about the community and about what Wrexham AFC means to the fans in that community, to the community itself, how important the club is as an institution, and how it defines Wrexham. And I don't think we've seen a documentary series, Chris, quite like this in terms of that scope. Yet, at least available to us in the United States.
Yeah, so the two things that interest me the most, and we'll get into this a little bit later in the podcast, in terms of Welcome to Wrexham, are promotion relegation, and then also the accessibility of games, or lack of accessibility of these games, if you want to watch them, if you're a fan in the United States, or just somebody that's interested or curious about this. We'll get into that in a little while. But going back to that ownership model and then the community aspect, the two things you mentioned, Kartik, that you're really interested in. I mean, as an aside, I think it's really interesting in this one where the more episodes I watch, I'm more really pleased with Rob McElhenney in terms of he's the driving force in this. And it seems that, I don't know, so far, like Ryan Reynolds doesn't seem to know much, or he cares for sure. I mean, he's invested. But Rob's the one that kind of wears the heart on his sleeve and seems to be more really focused He seems to have more soccer knowledge than Ryan Reynolds. So far, I'm waiting for Ryan Reynolds for something to happen where I'm like, okay, wow, he gets it, he understands it. However, whether he gets it or understands it, it doesn't matter, because the two of them together, in terms of the ownership model, I think it's pretty intriguing. And I don't think we've seen anything like this before. I mean, as far as two celebrities going in and buying a club. But what about you, Kartik? What for you makes this different? Why is ownership so important in terms of this one?
Yeah, I completely agree on the McElhaney Reynolds dynamic. I think clearly Reynolds is he's kind of invested, but I think it's like a secondary project for him. Whereas I think McElhaney, maybe being the bigger sports fan to begin with, right? He talks about his fandom for the Philadelphia Eagles in the very first show. I think McElhaney is the guy, from my perspective, that's driving this, right? He's the guy who's invested emotionally, and maybe the financial investment is the same between the two of them, but I really am enjoying seeing him as an American celebrity / American sports fan really take to promotion and relegation, as you mentioned, and the nuts and bolts of managing or owning a football club in the lower divisions of the English / Welsh pyramid, and his desire to put the best people in the job that understand the local community and understand football in England and Wales, including, you know, the absolute maniacal way he went by getting Phil Parkinson as a manager, right? The commitment and dedication he showed to that. I think most other owners would just give up in that situation, move on to the next target.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't listened to the interview that Kyle Fansler did with Humphrey Kerr, who's the executive director at Wrexham, definitely go back and listen to it in our last episode. A couple of things that do jump out at that from that episode are that it was Rob McElhenney who was working with Humphrey Kerr. They're both actors, comedians, writers, working on the show Mythic Quest, which was on Apple TV. It's actually a very good series, very funny. And it's the two of them were talking kind of like off camera, and oftentimes Humphrey Kerr would be watching a soccer game, watching Liverpool, or just consumed with Liverpool. And Rob was interested by this. He was kind of curious about this. And then Humphrey Kerr encouraged Rob to go ahead and watch Sunderland Till I Die from Netflix. And as soon as Rob saw that, he was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. This is crazy. And then from there, discussions happened about trying to acquire a club in England. And Humphrey mentions in the interview that they had 8 clubs that they were looking at as potential clubs, and they rated each one of them based on a whole bunch of different criteria. Community was part of that kind of algorithm that they came up with, and ultimately they decided on Wrexham. And then it was Ryan Reynolds that came in to say, like, hey, not only am I interested in sponsoring the team or working together with you, but I want to be in on that ownership model. I want to be in on that. I want to be a kind of a co-owner. And I think this is interesting, Kartik, too, because this flips the script. Sunderland Till I Die is one of the best soccer documentaries I think ever made. I mean, probably not the best, but one of the best. But that was mostly focused on relegation, seeing a club that was previously in the Premier League and going down the ladder. Here's an opportunity to flip the script and have Sunderland Till I Die, but this is Wrexham Till I Live, which is, from the fifth tier, seeing them going up the ladder. And what's unique about this, maybe they'll be stuck in the National League for many seasons in the future, probably not, but maybe. But what's different on this one is that it is televised. There's cameras wherever they go. So we will see, we will experience what it's like to go up the table rather than with Sunderland, where it's going down the table, which is the agony. There's definitely agony with trying to get promoted too. But I just think it's a really unique story, and the way that they're going about it, I just love it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for me, the most compelling aspect of this is seeing the town. Wrexham's, and to be honest with you, I remember Wrexham getting relegated out of the Football League. I didn't realize it now has been, well, now present day, but obviously the documentary starts a year and a half ago. But present day, it's been 15 years since that relegation. And I'm here thinking that the situation at Stockport, no spoilers, but I guess about the series if you haven't watched it yet. But Stockport is a club that I have a soft spot for. I basically support. I'll admit, since they've been out of the Football League, I have not followed them as closely as I used to. In fact, I don't follow them closely at all. I just check their results. I used to know the Stockport players. I used to follow Stockport really kind of as my second club behind Manchester City. But Stockport had been in the Football League for over 100 years, dropped out, and has been out now as this documentary is being made for 10 years. And I think that's particularly tragic. I should tell you, though, Chris, as an aside, as we talk about this, watching the documentary with my wife, who's not a football fan, although if she was pinned down to ask what club she likes, she'd say she likes West Ham because she's an EastEnders fan, and they're constantly talking about West Ham on EastEnders. I'm watching the documentary with her. There is an episode where Wrexham plays Stockport, and Stockport wins, and I'm excited. And she's mad at me while we're watching the documentary. And then I reminded her, she had forgotten this, that, hey, you know, remember, Stockport's a club I used to keep an eye on. I had even, in the early days of iFollow, was it iFollow then, or whatever package the Football League offered, I actually bought it 1 year to get Stockport games, and then that was the year they were relegated from the Football League, so 10 or 12 years ago. But yeah, so it's creating this attachment, I think, for neutrals who are watching it. To support Wrexham. Also, I should mention my wife is from Philadelphia. She loves It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Rob McElhenney is someone she adores. So that he's actually the connection for her. Whereas I think for most people, Ryan Reynolds is the bigger name, right? He's the guy Everybody seemed to know, including me. But for her, it's actually McElhenney and the Philadelphia connection, which is kind of cool also.
Yeah, the funny thing is, too, is that my wife has also been watching this series with me. I don't think every single episode, but she's definitely sat down and watched it. And that's the thing, too. I mean, the attraction of having a Ryan Reynolds and a Robert McElhenney doing this together, where it's two very noticeable, visible celebrities, very engaging, very fun to watch and listen to. They definitely have their comedic side. It makes it very, very, I guess, what's the word I'm looking at? Very mainstream. It's not a mainstream story by any means in terms of, you mean, two Hollywood celebrities buying a fifth tier club. That's not sexy, but perhaps having the host is sexy in the story of them trying to go up the ladder. But the other thing about this, too, is that I think the way that they've filmed it has been really well done. It's not condescending to me as a soccer fan. So when they do have descriptions of, you mean, the Welsh word for whatever it may be and the English word, I don't know, pitch, like something as simple as a field, you mean, and English people would call it pitch. And then in Welsh, it would be cae. You mean, it's not condescending because it's also translating it into Welsh. But the way it's set up, I think in many ways, Kartik, I had a revelation the other night. I was thinking about this a little bit. And I was thinking to myself, this is actually set up better than Sunderland Till I Die. Sunderland Till I Die seemed longer. I don't know. These episodes go by so quickly. It's, what, less than 30 minutes each episode. We're about almost halfway through season one. But I think it's really well done. Really, I guess, approachable. It's something that's easy to watch. It's entertaining. And it's interesting to watch at the same time. And I think the ownership model, from my memory, I can't think of anyone else who's gone in to buy a club, celebrities, and filmed it. This seems to be kind of the first that I can think of.
Yeah, I don't remember a situation like this before where we've had celebrities go in. But this is part of the dynamic of the documentary is you have these two celebrities. And it's like, I think... Ryan Reynolds is very loosey-goosey. I'm not saying he doesn't care, but he has a more humorous outlook, and there's the fun side of it. McElhinney now is like any owner who has bought a club, not because they're looking at it as an investment, but because they're looking at it as a passion. And he's living and dying, it feels like. Now, again, we've only seen 6 episodes. Season 1 is 15 episodes. But 6 episodes in, Chris, I feel like he's how we picture name another owner that was like that with a club. I know that there are a few. They're escaping me now. But that were so impulsively connected to their club that they were riding the wave every match day. Several owners like that in the past, but they tend to be local owners, right? They tend to not be celebrity owners. So that's what makes this very celebrity owners from across the Atlantic, which makes this very, very unique.
At the heart of this, though, at the heart of this buyout of Wrexham and everything that they do seems to be focused on the community. So they're very, very conscious of making sure they're making all the right moves, making sure that they're in discussions with the Wrexham Trust, the supporters, making sure this is the right decision, not only for them as owners, but also for the town and the club. And this part of it, I think, is the part that is the most endearing about Welcome to Wrexham, which is the whole community aspect. So you get to hear interviews and see interviews with the pub owner, the volunteer who then becomes in charge of the disability program for those disabled wanting to get access into the stadium and set that up, so on and so forth. Even the players part of that, I think, is really fascinating. Kartik, to me, is actually seeing where the players live. I mean, it's a fifth tier, it is professional, but seeing them, whether it's the one house where 5 of them are rooming together, or just the families. There are so many endearing characters in this story. And it's not characters as in actors. These are people that have lived and loved Wrexham for their lives, all of their lives. There's so many memories too. I'm thinking of the table of 3 women who have been Wrexham supporters for decades, going through all of the history of this club, where it almost went bankrupt, almost went out of existence, and them raising money, passing around the hat, trying to do things on a volunteer basis. This to me is what separates this even more so than Sunderland Till I Die. Sunderland Till I Die, we got a little bit of that, kind of the away supporters or watching the supporter listening to it on the radio, but you didn't get to get as much of a feel for what this means to the community as we do with Welcome to Wrexham.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I also think a really important aspect of the club's history is discussed in episode 5 or episode 6, I can't remember, but where they talked about the previous ownership that wanted, because it's prime real estate, right? There's no land. And this is the case with a lot of historic English football grounds, that the race course was eyed for redevelopment, and there was a shady scheme to to transfer the ground away from the club and put it in the hands of a development company got exposed. And I think they did such a great job of going back and getting the film, the footage from that era, and putting it together. But that was something that has plagued so many lower division clubs in England in recent years. And heck, that specific type of situation is why Bury went under, right? In my mm-hmm. opinion. And there's not, and why Bolton was passed around and almost went out of business. Bolton, of course, was a Premier League club for much of the Premier League era, and is a club that has spent more seasons in the top flight of English football than any other that has not won a title. That record used to be held by Leicester until a few seasons ago. Now it's held by Bolton. But Bolton almost went out of business. What is it now? 3 years ago? It's 2022, 2019. Because of similar circumstances. So I think that is a really important story that was told, that maybe a lot of the audience didn't quite grasp how close that is to happening in many, many cases. And in the case of Wrexham, as you said, the ladies we're talking about, those three ladies, they passed around the hat, they raised money, the supporters' trust took over the club, they saved the club. But of course, like most clubs, we saw this with Pompey also, we've seen it with other clubs in England, the supporters' trust can only be a stopgap to run a club. They never really... Wimbledon's a great story, but I think that's an exception. They can never really be the primary owners long term if you have a certain level of ambition.
Yeah, I think in many ways this series is the perfect storm. It has a little bit of everything in it. It has a club almost going out of business, a club with a long history. Some memorable days beating Arsenal in the FA Cup. Being in kind of the usually more of a championship club in terms of that second division tier level, but also third division, fourth division, etc. Also the fan base. There's a lot of things in here. I think for this series so far, what we're missing. And no spoilers, please, Kartik. But what we're missing is that success on the pitch. And hopefully, ultimately, that will come. Hopefully, it's well deserved that they earn it, which you have to. It's not easy to get out of the National League, as they mentioned. It's a really tough league with a lot of teams in there that are strong. Teams, well known teams with good squads. But overall, though, I think it's got a little bit of everything in this, and I guess that's the other part of it too, is that this shines a light on a story for a lot of Americans and soccer fans around the world on what life is like at a fifth tier club. This is not, with a championship with Sunderland, right? And Premier League and Sunderland, it felt like Sunderland was still in the Premier League in terms of the training facilities, the stadium, the players that they had, the managers. That was something we're very familiar with in terms of seeing clubs operate at that level. What we're not used to is seeing a fifth tier and what that means in terms of a lot of volunteer staff, the gym. That's most apartment complexes, anywhere in the United States have a better gym than what Wrexham has in their stadium. So it gives us a kind of an understanding of that fifth tier and what life is like. And actually, if anything, if Wrexham's, in terms of facilities, would be much greater, much better than most fifth tier teams in terms of what they have with a stadium, which is the home of the oldest international stadium in the world in terms of playing international football. That's still, it's Wrexham's only stadium. And hopefully will always be their stadium. But yeah, there's so much to this documentary that is just really eye-opening for me. And I'm looking forward to every episode before it comes out, for sure. The other aspect about this, Kartik, and I've kind of touched upon this too a little bit, is the whole promotion relegation. And with Sunderland Till I Die, which is really a relegation story and going through the agony and just the pain and depression of going down the ladder. You see kind of the anguish and pain on people's faces. This one is hope, for Wrexham, is that, of course, they've gone down the ladder. And like you said, too, it's been 15 years since they got into the fifth tier. It doesn't seem that long. It seems like it's maybe like 5 or 10 years, but 15 years, that's a very long time. However, there's always the hope of promotion and what that brings. And I'm not sure if you saw this from a few weeks ago, but one of the reporters from The Athletic did an interview with Ryan Reynolds and Rob. And the first question out of his mouth, or the first thing he mentioned in the interview, is pro-rel is obviously a non-starter in this country. And when he says this country, he means the United States. And to me, I was like, when I heard that, I'm like, it made me stop. And like, what? Did he just say that? Is that really what he said? And I'm like, oh my gosh, how do you start off an interview about a series that's talking about where promotion relegation is definitely A big factor, which is probably one of the reasons why, now that we've interviewed Humphrey Kerr, one of the reasons why Rob went ahead and bought the club with Ryan, with the hope of moving the team up the ladder. The United States, of course, is a different country. But did you see that, Kartik, in terms of that interview? And what's your thoughts about that? Is Pro Rel obviously a non-starter in this country?
I did not see the interview. I did see an interview the two of them did with GQ, which was kind of cool, where they were doing trivia based on Wrexham, right? And McElhaney won, right? It was a contest between the two of them. I think he won 10-7 or something. Although Reynolds knew more about the club and the town than I thought, given on the documentary, it seems like McElhaney is the driving force. But Rob McElhaney knows the town cold now. Like, even trivia questions about the town, he was able to get. In terms of Pro Rel, yeah, I know that that's the narrative among conventional American sports media. They have some sort of aversion to even the conversation. And there is an acceptance of a model of sport in this country, which is kind of insulated from competition from outside and competition within. And owners who make investments like that, and you always have these American fans and media come back at people like me who advocate promotion and relegation and say, well, look at how successful these American sports leagues are commercially. Look at how successful these American sports leagues are from a business standpoint. Okay, that's one aspect of it, but I would argue that you could be even more successful, particularly in this sport, which is a global sport, if you open up your system and you're part of a global marketplace rather than just a domestic marketplace or a limited marketplace in how ProRel, how a closed league works. And then secondly, I think this is most important, for communities like Wrexham, the equivalent of Wrexham in the United States, the equivalent of Villarreal in the United States, or Canada, those cities would not have first division clubs in this sport or in other American professional sports. They'd have a triple A baseball team or a double A baseball team. Wrexham's case, they'd have a single A baseball team. So there's no, you cannot, you're put in sort of a it's like a class system, right? You're put in the bottom of the barrel in the class system,
right?
In a tier
lower
system.
Lower class.
Yeah, you're a lower class, or you're middle class, or you're upper class, or whatever, and you can't move one way or another once you're in the American system. So it's a system that also prefers major cities and major metropolitan areas. So you could never have a club like Burnley stay as long as they did in the top flight until last season. Right, they would never be able to. Blackburn Rovers obviously won a title. We know Jack Walker came in. We know that story. But that's not possible in closed league American sports, because it's not just that the leagues are closed. It's that the leagues then gravitate to only the biggest metropolitan areas and only the biggest cities. So if you're in Omaha, you're out of luck. If you're in Des Moines, you're out of luck. If you're in Fort Myers here in Florida, you're out of luck. You have to drive to Fort Lauderdale or Miami to see professional sports, or Tampa or Orlando to see professional sports. And that's or top flight to professional sports. That's really not fair.
Yeah, the attraction that made Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds acquire Wrexham, the attraction was promotion relegation, is to buy a club and invest in that club, which they have done already through players and facilities, and they've got some big plans. But the attraction for them is to go ahead and create a success story, create a Cinderella story, where you can take something and hopefully, with investment and sporting merit, see that team succeed. Now, the attraction for viewers watching Welcome to Wrexham is living that dream, is seeing that, and it's in both the ownership side and in the viewership side, in terms of Ryan and Rob and us, the viewers, the attraction is promotion relegation. It's a concept that is foreign to most Americans. That's what attracts us to the story at the heart of it. And yes, there's the community aspect, there's the ownership model, there's the characters and everything involved in this and the great production. But the number one attraction is how unique it is, that the whole concept of promotion relegation. So, and I'm sure for Rob, when he was probably watching Sunderland Till I Die, and then maybe learning about or getting understanding the concept of promotion relegation was such a foreign idea that, like, wow, you can actually buy a club at a lower level and see them rise to the top, and sometimes teams also fall right from the top to the bottom. But that is the risk and reward. That is the sporting merit. And that's what attracts us to this game. Without that, it's very sterile. It is like you said, too. If you're living in a city or living in a town, really a large town in the United States that's not in a big TV market, and your hopes of having your local team be a big box office draw playing in the top league, that's effectively at this point in time, I mean, is it's never going to happen. So you can't live the dream. But going back to what The Athletic said, and if I was the reporter, or if I was The Athletic, I'd be embarrassed by this question. But him starting off the conversation by saying pro rel is obviously a non-starter in this country, Don Garber must have been like kind of jumping up saying like, wow, he did that better than I could have done in terms of defining that promotion relegation will never happen in this country. By doing that, you're basically saying that you give up. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy that promotion relegation will never happen in this country. Kartik, what's the chances of, you mean, so we saw in England, 1992 or the early 90s, Sky Sports and B Sky B, a lot of kind of the mega companies in terms of TV viewership and the clubs at the time were very upset in terms of they thought that the game wasn't run as effectively as it could have been, and they weren't making as much money. At the end, they formed a breakaway league that became the Premier League in 1992. In the United States, I mean, is there any possibility, you think, in terms of in the future of a breakaway league being formed where you have investors coming into this country and saying like, hey, let's go ahead and take the current, let's go ahead and create a new model that's going to be bigger and better after the 2026 World Cup, where we're going to have some teams, we're going to have promotion and relegation, we're going to set this up to really succeed in this country, where people in the United States are going to watch this and be attracted to this rather than watching soccer from overseas. Is that a pipe dream, or is there something to that?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It could happen, but it would have to come from outside, as you're stating. It would never happen from American investors, because the closed league system, I think, is cooked in, baked into high level investment in the United States. You can get investors who have less in the way of resources that are interested in promotion and relegation. In fact, I mean, I've dealt with a lot of them. I've tried to get promotion and relegation going in this country, as have many other people. But the high end investors tend to be, and I know this is going to create all kinds of anger when I say it, but they tend to be very risk averse in the U.S. And so they won't do it. And so this is going to have to come from outside.
So what about the U.S. Soccer Federation, Kartik? Because we know of course, and our listeners know this too, because we've reported on this for over the last couple of years. But the big divide happened, which is a big deal within U.S. soccer. But in terms of U.S. soccer and MLS working together on the TV rights deals, if you wanted to go ahead and have the rights to Major League Soccer, or if you wanted the rights to U.S. soccer, U.S. men and women, Major League Soccer is automatically included in that rights package. There wasn't a way to separate it. But now where we're at is that those rights have been separated. So MLS, as we know, sold their rights separately. U.S. Soccer sold their rights separately, too. So there is a divide there. They're not working together as they were before, which is a big deal. If U.S. Soccer said, hey, you know what, we can go ahead and we feel that we can set up a soccer league, a breakaway soccer league, and then we, U.S. Soccer, can go ahead and profit from this and maybe take some outside investors from overseas and form something. Is there anything there, or does U.S. Soccer maybe not have the desire to go ahead and do something like that, Kartik?
They don't have the desire to go ahead and do something like that. They are probably as big a problem as Major League Soccer. I think Major League Soccer, well, now MLS is a bigger problem, right? But I think if MLS had not been aided and abetted by the Federation, and there hadn't been these people in the Federation who were very hostile to promotion and relegation, let's say in 2004, 2005, that time period when MLS was struggling, and at the time USL, which was the second division, USL 1, as it was called then, it's now the equivalent of the USL Championship, had Seattle, had Vancouver, had Rochester, had a team in Toronto, had Portland, had all these kind of big places that ended up being the teams got directly pulled into MLS. Montreal Impact also. Then at NASL, we had a similar situation, right? There was an open hostility, and NASL, we had Montreal, Vancouver, and Minnesota, who went to MLS. Vancouver never played formally in our league, but they had affiliated with us and would have played in our league if they hadn't gone to MLS. But at that period, you had a will for it, and I think MLS as a business was in a bad place and maybe would have been open to it, but the Federation didn't want it, and the Federation fought it, even though they'll claim they were agnostic or whatever. They were almost like an absentee landlord that wanted leagues to get predatory with one another. So MLS coming in and taking USL teams, taking NASL teams, then USL turning around and taking NPSL teams, or NASL and USL poaching off of one another. It was more on USL's end poaching. But all of that has been encouraged by the U.S. Soccer Federation, which has created an atmosphere of not only destabilized, but an atmosphere where leagues are predatory and the Federation doesn't serve as a partner with other soccer entities in this country, but as an absentee landlord that does sanctioning. But then when they want to stop something, they come in as a gatekeeper. So one day they're an absentee landlord, the next day they're the gatekeeper blocking progress. So U.S. Soccer Federation is responsible for the situation we're in this country, more than any other entity, including Major League Soccer.
Yeah, so going back to the series Welcome to Wrexham, the one thing I find interesting, Kartik, about this is that it's almost like a time warp. So you and I know what happened last season for Wrexham. However, if you're watching the series and it's usually two episodes every week, the time period that these things are happening is a year ago. So you're going back 12 months. For the most part, even if you're a hardcore soccer fan, it's impossible to stay on top of every club, and you probably may not know what happened to Wrexham last season. And no spoilers again. You will find out pretty soon. I just think that's interesting in terms of that. But the other part of it, too, is that, and this was mentioned in the interview with Humphrey Kerr, where Kyle Fansler was talking about this, and it's one of those things that the National League, if you want to watch those games and you're outside of the UK, or even if you're inside the UK, it's really, really difficult. There's no legal way to go ahead and watch these games. So in some ways, that's actually an advantage, because it doesn't spoil, for the most part, the enjoyment of watching Welcome to Wrexham, because most people watching these episodes don't know what happens next. So the suspense part is kept there intact. And I think in some ways that if these games were more accessible and you could go ahead and watch Wrexham games week in, week out, in some ways, to a tiny degree, it would spoil Welcome to Wrexham. So I think, yes, it's great that Ryan Reynolds especially was very vocal on Twitter, pushing the National League, saying this is ridiculous. We want to grow our team, our club, our brand, worldwide, and it's ridiculous that no one can go ahead and watch these games legally unless you're actually at the stadium.
It's also partly BT's fault.
Right. Yeah, and BT Sports, who are the rights holders to the National League, and I believe have a kind of a wrap-up show, kind of a highlights show that has footage from these different games. But it is funny, though, too, because, I mean, obviously it'd be great for Wrexham to get this coverage, to have people be able to watch games week in, week out. But then, if they do get promoted, I mean, if they do go through the league system, it's going to be quite a while before you can actually watch Wrexham games even then, though, too. I mean, for me, as a fan of the Championship, or as a fan of a club that's in the Championship, yes, I can watch every single game, but I have to pay over $200 a season for the rights to be able to or have access to subscribe to watch these games, the home and away. I guess for iFollow, this could be huge for iFollow if Wrexham moves up through the ladders, through League One, League Two, etc. However, I just kind of think it's interesting that we can't watch those games. Have you watched any of the coverage on YouTube, Kartik, from Wrexham? Because their coverage is really good in terms of highlights package, interviews, etc.
Yeah, I have, and it's really well done. But again, most clubs don't have the resources in the National League to do that. So in order to grow the sport, you have to be willing to put the effort and resources in at that level. And this is part of my issue with the Premier League in general, right? I mean, I know there are a lot of people who want pro rel in the United States who argue with me about the Premier League and say, isn't that great? Isn't England the model? Well, no, it's not the model, because and we continuing to this day, even last week, I think it's all the acrimony's been put aside because of the death of the Queen. But there is a live dispute going on in how much money should the Premier League put into grassroots football and into the Football League below them. And the system in England was very different before 1992, right? Now, I'm not saying that it needs to be completely egalitarian like it was before 1992, because clearly that system it didn't allow Manchester United, Liverpool, the five clubs that led the Premier League breakaway, Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Everton, and Spurs were the fifth club. It didn't allow them to leverage their brands globally the way they wanted to. And obviously, three of those brands, Arsenal, Liverpool, and Manchester United, became absolutely huge globally after the Premier League breakaway. So I understand that and I respect that. But at the same time, I think that there's, as a result, been a lack of investment, particularly in League One, League Two, and the National League, as they're now known, as they're now called. So Wrexham does a great job with that production, with that package. But most clubs at that level don't have the ability or resources to do that, or the expertise, right? Wrexham clearly have an expertise in media and broadcast.
I wouldn't be surprised, Kartik, if in the next, say, 12 months we see a bunch of people walking around the streets of the United States wearing Wrexham shirts. It could be that kind of the hipster connection, but also could be something too where fans feel that they're a part of a team, or this could be a team that could be their second team or the third team that they support. I mean, they might support a team in the Premier League, they might support a team in Serie A or Major League Soccer, or wherever it may be. And Wrexham is a team that they have a soft spot for. The interesting thing too, I think, about this series, Kartik, I want to get your take on this too, is the subtitles. I'm dead against it. I think it's crazy. They're speaking English and the subtitles are on the bottom of the screen, and they choose which subtitles to show and which ones not to show, because sometimes it could be somebody that's, I mean, the person that's in charge of the Wrexham Supporters Trust. I don't think he has subtitles, but some of the other guys do. But I get it, though, too, because I think my wife and daughter, who have been watching some of the shows, too, like to have the subtitles on anyway when they're watching, no matter what it is. And I'm sure there's times where they can't understand what they're saying, but by reading it, it definitely completes the circle. What about at the Krishnaiyar house, Kartik? What's the feeling there?
Yeah, like I said, my wife watches EastEnders, so she understands the Cockney accent, which is a kind of a gateway to understanding all these other accents. Yeah, I don't care for the subtitles. I don't mind having them, I guess. I didn't think that deeply about it, but I'm listening, right? I guess the subtitles, they enhance it, but if I didn't notice the selectivity that you noticed. I don't like that. I've noticed that too when I watch programs where either people from Scotland are interviewed or people from India are interviewed. So I watched British-made documentaries of India where some Indians, their subtitles, they're all speaking in English, but some Indians, their subtitles, some there aren't, depending on the depth or severity or whatever, however you want to say it, the harshness of the accent. And same thing with Scots. I've seen lots of programs where, although actually with Scots generally, I do see subtitles because maybe for American audiences and even some English audiences, it's difficult for them to understand. But I picked up where I understand all of these accents pretty well: the Irish accent, the Scottish accent, Australian, New Zealand accent, Canadian accent, right? Even various dialects within the United States, right? There are different dialects. American English is not uniform, believe it or not. For some people may not realize that. So, I don't like, because I don't, either you do it universally or you don't do it at all.
Yeah, welcome to Wrexham. I've noticed lots of promotion. So in terms of watching, whether it's Premier League matches or other content or other programming, I'm seeing a lot of ads for Welcome to Wrexham on television, which is a good sign. I just wonder, as an aside, like what everyone in the MLS headquarters are thinking when they see that, because you mean it's something that asks a question, like, well, why doesn't this exist in US soccer? And you have that to a certain degree too with Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso is not a story of promotion and relegation, but that is one of the threads in the story. And I'm sure there's probably, some Americans going like, okay, I mean, even Ted Lasso, I think in some of the episodes, there's promotion relegation. Wow, you can actually get relegated down the ladder. Like, that's crazy. Like, you mean, who thought that was a good idea type of thing? What about the music, though, Kartik? What about the intro, the openings? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm a big Buddy Holly fan, so I love that they're using Every Day as the theme to Welcome to Wrexham. And I think it's doing, it's getting you in the mood, right? It's a very sentimental song. It's in a way a little bit of a tearjerker because we know that Buddy Holly then died in a plane crash soon after that song was released. But it's, well, some of us know that. I guess a lot of people don't know that. But it gets you in the mood and the tone for this kind of sentimental Welsh town where the football club means so much to them. And I think it sets the tone brilliantly. And as you said, a lot of it is prompted by the fact that McElhaney had had watched football while he's producing programs and had watched Sunderland Until I Die. And so there's that element of it too. And there was, in Sunderland Until I Die, one thing they did a very good job of was showing the volunteers, the ticket takers, the people in the town, how they interact with the football club. I don't think they quite got into the depth of what the club necessarily meant to individuals in the town, the way Welcome to Wrexham has done so far through six episodes. But it is very much kind of a combination of all of the things. And here's the other thing. I know for a lot of people watching, they haven't worked in a football club or they haven't worked in a football league. I've done both. So for me, the documentary is even better than maybe it is for a lay fan who just wants to see football and might like listening to Mikel Arteta's team talks and Pep Guardiola's team talks in the Amazon series. You know, after one or two of those, I checked out. The Mourinho one, the Spurs one, was more interesting just because it's Mourinho, right? And we know how his personality is. But I that doesn't excite me the way seeing a club operated and the relationship between a club and a town is. But I understand some people may be different. They may like the Arsenal documentary series better than they like this. I guess to each their own.
Yeah, it's funny, Kartik. If you went back, say, 15 years ago, which you and I would have been doing the podcast back then, or variations of it, you were writing for what was then EPL Talk, later became World Soccer Talk. But 15 years ago, if you said to me, Kartik, either on the podcast or in written form, that I predict in roughly 15 years that three of the most popular shows on television in terms of soccer would be the trilogy of Sunderland Till I Die, which is vastly very, very popular on Netflix, Ted Lasso on Apple TV, one of the most popular success stories that Apple TV has had, and now on FX, which is a major network, it's on FX, it's on Hulu in the United States, on Disney Plus in Europe. But and then Welcome to Wrexham. 15 years ago, if you made that prediction, what would have people have said back then?
Oh, it would have been crazy. I mean, it is ironic it's 15 years because the summer of 2007, I remember very well being the summer that Ebbs Fleet United began looking for club members in the U.S. And I signed up to being part of that football club. And it was just a very niche thing. Sunderland, you mentioned specifically, Jonathan Wilson had written a book about Sunderland that I think was finished that summer that I ended up reading soon thereafter that had got me intrigued in the history of that club. Now, it didn't make me a supporter of that club. I was already supporting Manchester City at that point. And as I've said on this podcast, I had my second club was Stockport. Nowadays, my second club would probably be Queen's Park Rangers. But that's a different story. But it's funny because then Sunderland becomes a household thing 10 years later when the Netflix series comes out after that Jonathan Wilson book. Jonathan Wilson book chronicles them returning to the Premier League. This Netflix series chronicles them falling out of the Premier League. But that shows how much the popularity of the Premier League specifically changed from 2007 to 2017 when Netflix did that series. Then you talk about the Wrexham thing 15 years later. Yeah, that's pretty unbelievable because the Ebbs Fleet United thing was a very niche U.S. Niche thing in the U.S. And then in terms of Ted Lasso, I think that to me is the most unbelievable thing because, quite honestly, I know maybe you felt differently than I did. I always felt like I was isolated as a fan of English football in the United States. No one cared about it, right? No one knew about it. I still believe that even after NBC elevated the scope and scale of Premier League coverage in this country when they got the rights in 2013 and used that character right away, right? Ted Lasso was a big part of their initial promotional campaign when the Premier League rights went to NBC Sports in the summer of 2013. But the runaway success of that and the general awareness of the Premier League now among people who don't even watch the league, don't like soccer, don't follow soccer, is unbelievable. It's like the Premier League has become What do we have? Four major professional sports leagues in the country outside of soccer, and then college sports and golf. It's like the Premier League is now in that conversation with all of those things, whereas it never was before. And it was getting there, but I think the show has put it over the top.
So one last question, Kartik, and this will be our final one of this episode. But imagine, though, if you're a TV producer and you said to somebody who comes up with pitches and ideas, and you were supposed to, as the TV idea person, go to the producer and pitch a story. But pitch a story about American soccer. What angle, what story, what thing, what concept would be intriguing to a TV producer about American soccer? Is there anything within American soccer that would be a story that's worth telling, that would be as successful as Sunderland Till I Die, Ted Lasso, and Welcome to Wrexham?
Well, ultimately, it's blocked by the fact you don't have promotion and relegation. But I think the story of Detroit City, of Chattanooga, of some lower division clubs where there have been major supporter involvement, supporter owned clubs, or Chattanooga has floated. It has floated and allowed people to buy a piece of the club. Those sorts of things are good stories to tell. And maybe another really good story to tell is how soccer has really grown on the grassroots level in these smaller towns around the country, and how you get fanatical support in places like Kingston, New York. But which is, by the way, you know, the Hudson Valley, places like that. Those people in Kingston don't have to drive to New York City to enjoy a local club playing good high level football in their community. But Kingston, Stockade FC, can never be promoted in this system up the ladder, which is a big bugaboo, right? I mean, imagine having Stockade play in the same league as a team from New York City or a team from Albany or some sort of rivalry like that. So that's ultimately what holds it back. So, Chris, if we were to tell a story like I'm pitching to a television executive, ultimately it would be, okay, here is the grassroots enthusiasm, here's the grassroots energy, but you can never have a Wrexham story or a Sunderland story ultimately because there's no promotion and relegation. So that's the problem. So you're telling a story that's similar, but then there's a cap on how good the story can be and how the story can evolve from season to season.
Yeah, there's no treasure at the end of the journey on that one, right? It does hit a roadblock, a dead end. And then the story ends, and then it's like, okay, well.
I mean, the only exception would be unless you get an investor. So Nashville, I'll be frank about this. So this is maybe something that does sort of debunk my theory, but then at the same time, it confirms it. Nashville was a supporter's own club, right? It was a supporter-driven effort. It was a club that was started by supporters that then kept, as they changed leagues and they moved up the ladder, they had to attract investors. And then eventually the supporters were not part of the ownership and management structure anymore, and now they're at MLS. So it can happen in a way. You could get one of these non-league clubs, which is what Nashville started out as. They started out as an NPSL club run by supporters and climbed the ladder. Then they went to PDL. Then they went to USL. Then they end up in MLS. But along the way, you have to make these compromises where it can't happen really organically. So I mean, I guess if there's one club you want to chronicle that climbs the ladder, it would be that one. But the reason they were able to climb the ladder is they got outside investment. And eventually the people who started the club don't run the club anymore. They might go to games, but that's it.
The story that I want to that I would pitch is a story that's already been pitched. And it still isn't out. I've heard nothing about it in quite a long time. But that's the story about Chuck Blatter. And what happened with him and his life story and all of the corruption and what people knew and the inside deals that were done within FIFA and CONCACAF. And it was supposed to be starring Will Ferrell. It was supposed to be an HBO movie. I think Ben Affleck was producing it. And that's been a few years now, and we haven't heard anything more about that. So, I mean, it's based on a really good book, but in terms of the motion picture or a TV series, it hasn't appeared yet. But that would be my pitch.
So there you go. I think you just nailed it. So I gave all these kind of long explanations as to U.S. Soccer Federation, why we don't have ProRel, et cetera, the rationalization and justification by American sports journalist Chuck Blazer. There you go. I mean, if Chuck Blazer doesn't have the influence in FIFA ultimately that he had, I think maybe the system looks very different.
In a good way or a bad way?
Oh, in a positive way. If he's not around, then I think the U.S. has to build a system like the rest of the world. They don't get to take these shortcuts. They don't get this protected status that they've gotten. Effectively, there's one set of rules in this sport for every other nation in the world, and there's a different set of rules for the United States. And that's because of Chuck Blazer and because of the influence he accrued within the larger FIFA community. And convincing FIFA, and we know how corrupt FIFA is, convincing FIFA that there was more money to be made in the United States, because it is the greatest captive consumer market in the world, we know this, more money to be made in the United States than in other places, which is true. So let's take all these shortcuts. Let's do it differently here. Protect us, and then we'll make sure you're rich also. And that's what happened. That's a very 30-second summary of a 40-year story. There's many more layers to it, but that's kind of the simple takeaway.
I think I did a Freudian slip there, Kartik. I think I called him Chuck Blatter. Yeah. which tells you a lot there.
That's appropriate. You're thinking the same thing I think all of us are thinking.
All right, let's end it there. But listeners, if you do have any feedback or any questions about Welcome to Wrexham or anything about television streaming, etc., definitely get in touch with us. You can reach us through email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com, facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can leave us a message there. You can also tweet us @worldsoccertalk. And also post your comments on the website at worldsoccertalk.com in the podcast thread. And we'd love to read those out in future episodes. Last but not least, you can also leave an audio voicemail at 561-247-4625. And on behalf of Kartik and I and the World Soccer Talk crew, thank you for listening. And Kartik, heading into another week of soccer, what are you going to do and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.